Welcome to the Goodness Podcast, the Middle East's first platform dedicated to tackling women's health in a real and honest way. I'm your host, Noor Tahini. Morning, ladies.
Hi. Hello.
Thanks so much for joining me today. And actually, happy World Mental Health Day to our listeners and our viewers, because this episode is going to be released on October 10th. So if you're watching this, you're in the future. And happy World Mental Health Day. I don't think we've ever needed a World Mental Health Day or like a celebration or awareness of mental health more than we have this year.
Agreed.
It's been a tough one. It's really been a tough one. And I'm grateful that you both agreed to join me today to discuss sort of mental health, meditation, increasing accessibility to both of those for people. And I'm very grateful to Lululemon, who's decided to dedicate a lot of their October activations to this. We need it, I think, more than ever. So just to kick things off, I'll ask you both to introduce yourselves one at a time, and that'll help our listeners who are not watching the video sort of get familiar with your voice. So Dani, do you want to go first?
So hi, I'm Dani, and I'm the co-founder of Safe Space. So we're an initiative that are all about accessibility to mental well-being. And I've been in Dubai for 13 years, mum of two, had lots of life's ups and downs. And now I can kind of finally see that my journey has made me one of the best people possible to do what I do today. So that's what we're up to just now.
Awesome. Neha?
Hi, my name's Neha. I am an ambassador for Lululemon and I teach yoga in the community here in Dubai and outside of it when we're able to travel. I've been on my journey for about eight-ish kind of years, been teaching for almost five. And I think more recently, even more so this year than ever before, my meditation practice has grown volumes. And while all the avenues of yoga, I think, are about embodiment, meditation for me is more and more the key to kind of understanding and becoming really connected with where we are in our lives on and off the mat.
Absolutely. What kind of led you to discovering meditation?
Well, my mom is actually a meditation teacher.
Okay.
But I don't think you can ever drag a horse to water and expect for it to drink it. So I don't think she ever tried to force me to sit down and breathe and meditate. Because for me, when I first started my practice, it was all about my movement being my meditation. And I've heard practitioners say that, you know. So wherever you are in your journey is where you need to be. And for me, maybe about 2 years ago, I got to a point where my practice just didn't feel like it was doing enough. And so I started on this journey to explore a little bit more breathing, a little bit more meditation, the way my mom was teaching it. That didn't, I mean, I love what she teaches, but her practice is very different to mine. I like mindfulness. I think we're going to go a little bit later into how we got into our journeys. And for me, the practice of just being silent and becoming more aware is a gift that I've just recently learned how to give myself. So I think it's really, really important that we, you know, the more we live in a really noisy, overstimulated world, that we learn how to just cut off from that from time to time and really check in with ourselves and understand where we are and who we are.
Actually, when we were discussing this, you told me that you kind of divided meditation into two, right? There's, I think you called it awareness meditation. And then what was it that your mom practices?
So, I actually got this from Tara Brach. She was doing a talk on embodiment, one of my teachers. And she was saying that, you know, there are kind of two schools of meditation. There's one school that kind of wants to get, is all about enlightenment, you know, like Kriya Yoga and Kundalini Yoga. It's all about raising your Kundalini, raising your vibration, and reaching that point of Nirvana versus other school, which is more the Buddhist technique, I think, is all about understanding and reconnecting with your body because we live quite disembodied lives. Everything that you've ever wanted, everyone tells you, is outside of you, whether it's happiness and love and caring and compassion. We're always looking outside of ourselves for these things. And so the Buddhist practice of meditation is more about sitting with yourself, reconnecting with yourself and understanding that everything that you've been ever searching for is inside of you.
Yeah. It's so true what you said, like about every, like we hunt for things that are external to us as opposed to looking inside of us. And there's a Rumi quote that I love, which I'm probably going to butcher now because I haven't read it in a long time, but he says something like, the whole universe is inside of you, mm-hmm. something along those lines. They actually, such a beautiful quote that they have it at the Louvre Abu Dhabi. When you walk in, they've engraved it on a window or a wall or something. And I think that's so powerful because I've also found that in moments where you sit in silence, so much comes to you. It's unbelievable. Like your gut plays a huge role. You know, you find answers inside you. You find peace inside you. You find... The problem is we don't listen because we're so distracted and there's so much happening. And even when it's not distractions that we can contribute to, like I'm in like season 7 of Suits and I started it about a month ago. And I don't know why I'm doing this to myself, but it gives you like a way to escape the current moment that we're in. So even when it's not like self-inflicted in that sense, everything happening around us and the lives that we live today are very distracting and they're quite difficult. And understandably, we look for ways to remove ourselves from ourselves because that kind of it kind of blunts the trauma or blunts what we're going through. Dani, how did you arrive to where you are and what kind of gave you, what got you interested in mental health, mindfulness, and so on?
Well, my mom was not a meditation teacher. Yeah. And really my journey was rather than kind of seeking for answers, it was needing answers. So hitting rock bottom multiple times. Mm. And then the next time you're like, is this the one? And it just couldn't continue. And really probably around 5 years ago, when I say the wheels fell off, the more outward sign was crying in a client meeting after receiving bad feedback, which, you know, working in the creative industry, you get all day, every day. Mm. But that day was too much. And that was a very, you know, it was an experience, a very tangible experience I think I had to have because I was so unwilling to want to dig deep and actually sit with myself that experience really was the like punch in the face. It was like the realization.
A slap in the face that you needed, yeah.
Yeah, it was really difficult. And from that point, reaching out for help, I've really managed to work backwards and go through a lot of the different points of trauma with a little t in my life. I think sort of on paper, I've had a pretty great life. And that was something that I struggled with because textbook, you know, great job, great family, but still not able to enjoy it. That was one thing that used to tip me off balance. So I really went on a mission to figure out what the heck was going on because it just didn't make sense. Mm. I was a smart person. And I found a Buddhist teacher randomly through Googling one day.
No way.
Who happened to be passing through Dubai, which I don't think that ever happens. So she was there to kind of kickstart that process. I think when you get into this world, when you're searching for answers and resources and materials, a lot of good people come to the surface. So I met with her at the very beginning of that, and it really just changed everything, and it put a huge different perspective on my coasting through life, that actually a lot of things had happened for a reason, and it's made me very self-aware, which I had none of before. Mm. The idea of meditating for me was hell, like to sit with yourself and try and listen to your thoughts. Yeah. Like, no, thank you. Yeah. That is not something that I would like to do. And it's still something that I'm perfecting, or not perfecting, but working on and practicing and being curious about. I think it's a journey. I've tried lots of different ways. I prefer kind of more guided meditations and working with sound. That's something that really kind of helps me remove myself from that moment. It's been quite checkered. There's been lots of things along the way. I've struggled with postnatal depression after the birth of my first child. And that was, it was difficult because you're supposed to really enjoy being a mother and there was lots of expectations. So again, trying to be mindful through that process when, you know, struggling with something that feels so debilitating, it's been, I felt that I've been forcing quite a lot of things to happen. And now I don't know whether it's old age or just I don't have energy anymore. I'm just trying to let things flow and see what kind of comes along.
What you receive.
Yeah.
As opposed to pushing.
Which is a heck of a lot easier.
Do you still see your meditation teacher, your Buddhist meditation?
Yeah. So she, it's funny because she's like 72 now, but she has like people that help her with social media and she travels all over the world. So I can kind of still keep connected with her that way. But I definitely want to kind of, I was supposed to go meet up with her this summer, which didn't happen. So let's see when the restrictions lift, if I can go meet with her again.
When the restrictions lift. It's funny because I feel like everyone remembers very clearly when they first started to find out about meditation. Because I was talking to a few friends about this before the podcast, trying to understand what people's perceptions of meditation were and how people sort of interacted with the concept of mindfulness and meditation. And everyone remembers really well either the first conversation they had with a friend who was like, oh, you should download Headspace. Mm. Or the first time that they went to a class they were just going to a yoga class and they thought it was just going to be physical. But in fact, it turned out to be so much more than that. And there was meditation at the beginning. And they're like, oh, what is this new world that I've stumbled upon? Yeah, I remember for me, it was in the US and I had a few days in LA and I was there by myself. And I was like, okay, I can either stay in my hotel room and just go out for meals or I can find something more interesting to do with my time. And I went online and I found this meditation studio, which I haven't seen anything like this in Dubai yet, but it's basically the equivalent of a fitness studio in the sense that there's multiple rooms, there's a schedule, you go in, you know, you check in, the same as if you were going to a yoga studio, except every single thing on the schedule from morning to evening is a different kind of meditation. And so I was there for 3 days. I signed up to as many as I could. And the woman at the reception was like, you know, it's not like the more you do, the more you can't just like do 11 hours of meditation a day and become more. I was like, okay, fine. So I'll just like cap it at three, four sessions. But I did everything. I did 30 minutes of staring at a candle flame. That was quite interesting. There was chanting. There was dancing. And I was so amazed at how many things fall under the umbrella of meditation. What does meditation look like for you guys? How do you meditate?
Quite frankly, even the yoga practice, the asana practice, is moving meditation.
Yeah.
Meditation is awareness, right? So it's a building, it's a cultivating of awareness. So I don't think that meditation is what happens when you sit on a cushion mm-hmm. and you have mala beads and you're chanting and watching your breath. That's not meditation. Yeah. I'm drinking this water. I'm with the taste of this water and I'm with the sip and with the sensation of the temperature of this water. That's meditation. So you're cultivating this practice of awareness that you take away with you and you're with every single moment of the rest for the rest of your day.
Yeah.
That's meditation. So whether you're having a conversation, I'm in this conversation with you. I'm not on my phone. You know, wherever I am, I'm doing the one single thing because what you realize about the present moment is the simplicity of it. And the fact that we continue to get overwhelmed and stressed out is like we're doing too much at any given point. So if you realize that you could be just hanging out with your breath in the moment and life can be that simple from moment to moment, that's meditation.
How would you differentiate between meditation and mindfulness? Or are they one and the same? Because when you were talking there, I was thinking that a lot of the things that you were mentioning, I would have used the word mindfulness, but are they interchangeable?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so, for sure.
Danny, what does it look like for you?
Well, I always think that when you search Google images for what something is, so when you put in meditation, you would see that person sat cross-legged on a rock, you know.
The mudra, is that what they call the fingers like this?
Yeah.
Just, you know, looking like perfection. Mm. And I think it couldn't be far from that. Mm-hmm. That it really is a process and it's so unique to everybody. I think, you know, what works for Nehal wouldn't potentially work for me and your version of it as well. And that awareness to try and find out what it is that does work for you is kind of part of that process really. But I think, you know, and maybe this is from a branding background, but it's almost got this sort of strange brand reputation that it is for certain people and not for others, or it's for people that are on a journey to enlightenment, but not that are, you know, recovering from a traumatic event. So I think we have to do a lot more kind of work to sort of demystify meditation a lot, and whether it is the language that we use around it and understanding what that means and means to us. So yeah, I think it's quite a complex thing, mm-hmm. but in essence, it's super simple. We live in a sort of society where, you know, multitasking is celebrated. And I remember going to every job interview I've ever had and told someone how good I am at multitasking, like yeah. it's a badge of honor. Mm-hmm. And now getting to that point and through awareness and education that I understand actually being quite single focused is actually more of a benefit to myself and to other people around me. It's a huge shift. So we're almost like battling against those external pressures yeah. to figure it out.
Why do you think we need this so much today? Like, let's look at it more of like a wider lens. What's happening to us, like on a societal level, on an energetic level, on a mental level, that is resulting in us being one of the most anxious generations ever?
So for me, it's kind of double-ended. So you have this generation that are, you know, we've grown up in between kind of the old way of doing things, you know, very family orientated, a lot more simple, not as much internet. And, you know, the younger generations, that's all they've ever known. And we're kind of like one foot in, mm-hmm. one foot mm-hmm. out. So I remember kind of growing up and that simple parts of childhood now sort of mixing and molding into the expectations of where we're supposed to be in the modern world. So, and I think with that comes a lot of, you know, our upbringing has everything to do with who we are or who become as a person. But then that's more of the reactive side, but like the proactive side where we know we don't feel okay, but we just have so many distractions that we don't have time to really sit with that and understand what that means to us. So we're kind of trapped between what we've brought with us and what's expected of us.
Yeah.
And I think it's just what we've just been through with going through lockdown and not being able to see family and losing sort of human connection and still having expectations has just made it, even more difficult for us to sort of break free from that. But at the same time, I think that what we've just been through has also been quite a transformative, it's a big reset button. That's almost that real hard shift that everyone had to go to realize that don't feel great or I could feel better and then working with that.
I went on a Vipassana at the beginning of this year. And
explain what a Vipassana is.
Oh, it's a silent meditation retreat. Oh, can I just go back to that question about meditation and mindfulness for
a
second?
Yeah, of course.
So I think meditation is the word we use for the same thing that we do if you're on the track in India. I think mindfulness is a Buddhist way of describing what meditation is. And meditation is the Indian way of describing what mindfulness is. It's just different words for the same thing.
So mindfulness is more of like a Western way of looking at
no,
it?
No, it's a Buddhist way of looking at it. Okay. So like for me, for example, our teacher on this retreat that I will tell you about, he was like, try not to change the breath. You're not about to get enlightened here. Just observe. We're cultivating awareness. You know, so it's just about being quiet and watching. Being quiet and cultivating this idea of being the observer. That's it.
And like a judgment-free way, they always say, right?
Yeah. Versus, again, maybe the meditation is, I want to chant, be a good person, be a good human, get rid of my karma, burn my karma. You know,
got it.
Kundalini rising, enlightenment, nirvana.
So one is more doing and one is more watching.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Back to why we need this stuff. I think that, as I said, I went on this Vipassana, the silent meditation retreat, was there for 10 days, no talking.
Where was it?
Kandy in Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
I'd never been to Sri Lanka, awesome place.
Kandy's where the jungle is, right?
Yeah, so beautiful, nice, and mountains. I was talking to the teacher who was leading the Vipassana, and I said to him...
How are you talking to him?
Well, we were just able to interact with him, that's it. If we had questions, we were meant to ask him. But I was just having a quick little chat with him, and I said to him, dude, it's really stressful being a yoga teacher. And he just burst out laughing. And he said, you do realize you have a choice not to be on social media, right? Like there were people who've done this before you for decades and decades and centuries and never lived on social media and kept it quite simple. Mm. And I was like, yeah, but it's, you got to do all this now. You got to be on social media. And I have such a dilemma as well. It doesn't come to me naturally to take videos of my food and tell people where I am and what I'm doing and put a camera in front of my mat. My mat, like my mat and my practice are sacred. And the more I travel down this route, the more in, like the more I want to withdraw, you know, not put everything out there because it's a very sacred practice what you do. But I feel like we're all chasing success. And we're not even sure what that looks like. Because I don't think, I mean, I know people with money and I really don't believe it's in money. Like, I don't feel like people understand what they're after. And we have this beautiful vessel that we've got for a certain amount of time to explore our consciousness. And we leave that till the age of 70. But then we're chasing success in the meantime and we're not really sure what that looks like. We put a bank account into the equation. We put a piece of property into the equation. Maybe we even put a Mercedes or an Audi into the equation.
Number of likes.
Yeah, a number of likes, and there still is this gap that's not being filled. One of my Dharma teachers, he says, you know, nothing can fill the God-shaped hole in your heart. It's like when you sit down and you make that connection with yourself, that's really what you're looking for. That's really the only thing that will satisfy this craving for all the things, again, that you're looking for outside of yourself. So I think it's necessary to stop. And I feel like this year, more than ever before, a lot more people are turning to mindfulness and meditation to seek things because we're not able to go out as much. We're not able to hang out with other people as much. The quality of the connections that we have never been more poor. Like we've got 1,000 friends on Facebook or, 10,000 followers on Instagram, but are you really connected to those people? So I think people more and more are looking for a deeper connection. And I'm really glad to see a lot of people asking questions about mindfulness and meditation because that might be the best place to start right now.
It's interesting, actually, because I recorded a podcast about a month ago on a friend's podcast, and we were talking about self-acceptance and the current state of things. And we both agreed that we're having, as a population, we're having an existential crisis because, like you were saying, so much is changing so fast. You've got one foot in, one foot out into different things, you know, between the two generations, as you were explaining. And we are living a life right now where we're told that we could be whoever we want. We can have whatever we want. And I feel like that also creates so much dissatisfaction because you can always do better. You can always have better. You can always have a better house. You can always have a better holiday. You can always have
more followers,
a hotter husband. You know, you can always have a more attractive, body. You can always have. So we're always chasing and I don't know, other than sort of stopping and looking inside, what else can stop that chase? You know, how else we can put a stop to that chase other than introspection?
Yeah. One teaching that really resonated with me, and whether it was timing, was suffering is the gap between our expectations and reality. And it was just like so simple. It's just a few words, but like literally cut me to the core. Help me understand where my expectations are, where I was at with my reality and why I was putting myself through so much suffering. And that really put a lot of context around what was going on for me at that time.
Did that mean that it was important for you to reassess your expectations?
Yeah, I think because I was feeling, all I knew was the suffering, so how I felt, what I was going through, it was suffering. And then to have context around it, that it was a space that I was in, because what I was reaching for, aiming for, expecting from my life is here, is, one end of the spectrum, and then where I'm kind of assuming my life to be at, that gap, I'm making that gap even bigger for myself, and then trying to pull those two places closer together has really helped.
So the goal of meditation, mindfulness, and these practices is to find some form of inner peace, right? Have you guys ever found it? Have you felt it?
I'd love to know where it is. I think I found glimmers, like the little moments of inspiration, little glimmers of the reality, you know, not really masquerading over what it's, I mean, like the expectation part again. But just that stillness is really liberating for me, because I don't, as a, you know, historically have it, because I have quite a busy mind and have then had quite a busy life as a distraction to kind of keep up with that. So those moments of stillness have been quite powerful.
Is stillness, is that, so if I reframe my question to say, what is it, what is the main benefit that you get out of this, and why do you keep doing it? Is it to get that stillness?
It's a pause in my kind of thinking and my day and everything else that's going around. It's time for me. Like I said, I do prefer sort of more like guided meditations, where I'm actually trying to use it as a learning experience as well. Sometimes that's good because it can help remind me of where I'm up to. Sometimes it can also be distracting as well. But I love being distracted. So actually, it's just that, it is just that piece of time.
What's your favorite distraction?
I've got a list, but you know, Netflix is definitely, I've completed Netflix I think twice because I hacked my VPN, so now I can get a different
you can say a different that on, region. I don't think you can say that on the podcast.
Rewind.
I'm kidding, girlfriend.
So yeah, I think that you know, I struggle, I'm an only child and my parents are only children, so I struggle a lot with loneliness, which is not something I was aware of again till quite recently. Through practice, through really kind of getting to like lots of inner child work, really going back to those points. I don't enjoy being on my own. So actually when you put yourself in a meditation type practice where you are on your own, then that can be quite daunting. For somebody that is, you know, quite busy, quite busy minded, to have that break and that pause, it's really important.
Yeah. It's a necessity, I'd say.
It certainly is.
Neha, what do you get out of it?
So I have, I want to add to Danny's definition of suffering. For me, it's wanting to be anywhere but here. Not being okay with being in the present moment, because there is something better. I'm going to get through this week so I can get to the weekend. So I just go through the days. I'm rushing to the end because the destination is so much juicier, so much better than the journey, right? So for me, I come from a background, the way I found yoga, my path was, I was a raging alcoholic. I used to be in advertising as well. It kind of wasn't my path, and I was numbing myself out because I was absolutely miserable. Miserable in my relationship, miserable in my work, just everything collapsing, crumbling around me. And I'd really like, I literally had about 6 months to live. I had the choice of consciously stopping to drink and abusing my body, or to just kind of end this life and maybe, hopefully, as a Hindu, start a new one. I chose to fight, and rock bottom was a very, very hard place to start. But I think I've kind of discovered my purpose as a healer more and more. Along the journey, I believe everything that you go through happens for tons of reasons that become clear. But I think more than even the physical practice, what meditation has made possible for me is to sit with feelings. I'm the kind of person who used to go to bed with the TV on. I needed constant noise all the time. Netflix on in the background, TV always on, music always on. I could never just be still and kind of just sit with, especially the feelings that I didn't want to feel. So meditation for me has made it really possible to sit with fear, to sit with anxiety, to sit with stress, to sit with things that I don't want to feel, and discover what they're really about, where they come from, what kind of reactions do I have in my body to them, how can I befriend them so they can actually become tools that I can use in my practice, in my teachings, rather than run away from. Because I know that all of us struggle with these things. So how can I help myself cope with this stuff so I can turn around and teach my students, my followers, to do the same thing?
That's really self-awareness, right? Is that how you would describe that?
Self-awareness and just, on understanding as well, like reducing suffering in general. Why are we running away from things? Why are we constantly chasing happiness? I mean, if I met someone who was constantly happy, I think they would be crazy. Like, that would be a crazy person.
Yeah.
So why are we running away from the gamut of experiences that we're supposed to have in a lifetime, chasing joy and happiness and ecstasy? Why not experience everything? Because there is beauty and teachings and learnings in all of it. So yeah, meditation has just made it really possible for me to love the silence, because that's where the learning is.
Yeah. When you were talking and you were saying how, like, you've come so far on this journey and you're learning to not distract yourself as a way to escape the current moment and sort of focus on the future, focus on anything but now, it made me think of myself and my situation, because, you know, I've come a long way in the past few years, and it's partly because of my professional journey with goodness and all the people that I've met and spoken to and the different things I've experimented with. But maybe you will agree, and you've experienced this as well, it's really easy to dip back into old habits. And it's really easy to, when things don't go, when things shift so drastically around you, like they have in 2020, and your needs to escape and live somewhere other than in your mind and in the present kind of happen, it's so easy to, I hate saying fall off the bandwagon, because it's not a wagon that you fall off, right? Even those emotions are valid in your practice of being with your emotions. And it's very interesting to watch yourself in retrospect and see, okay, what was I escaping here and why did I do that? And do you guys find that as well, that it's really easy to sort of dip in and out of that?
I mean, I'm still cultivating a daily practice of meditation, but I was going to say, you know, this year has kind of been a good test for me in terms of, you know, like when you're a recovering alcoholic, it's not so much a label, but a reminder that you choose to be sober every day.
How long have you been sober for?
I'd say I started my sobriety journey about 5 years ago. I've been sober, I've relapsed a couple of times, and I've been sober now 2.5 years.
Is it something you've been very open about?
I have. Okay. I have, because I feel like the more I'm able to speak about it, and the more I'm able to help other people. So yeah, I've taught a couple of drunk yoga classes. I mean, it was scary in the beginning, changing careers and starting this brand new journey right at the bottom, where I feel like, you know, at the age of 30, I'm like, oh my God, I got to restart this career and be unstable all over again. Mm-hmm. The instability of it all was really daunting at times. You know, I've started to deal with it a lot better now, but you're constantly walking the path of the unknown, because as a solopreneur, it's just, you're always constantly in a path of learning, and you better get comfortable with that. But yeah, it's been a good learning curve this past, you know, from January onwards, really, because my home studio closed down, and it's been like, okay, well, let's get the website running. Are these classes going to work? Am I going to make money? You know, what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. I could really use a drink right now. No, you shouldn't. Maybe I should. No, but meditate instead. Like, it's just, it's constant. Yeah. So the choice to be sober is every single day. And I think meditation, you know, to have a fresh mind, to be able to do things from a place of response versus reaction, not to wake up with a heavy head, and to be able to just sit down and connect with myself, it trumps the need to, you know, have a glass of Diet Coke and vodka.
So interesting mix.
I know, right? I'd say yes. Red Bull and vodka, but it became Diet Coke.
And whiskey or something. Yeah.
I used to drink everything. Just give me a bottle of whatever, I'll put in my purse. Like, I used to carry it around all the time.
Yeah. We touched a little bit on how there's these misconceptions around meditation and misconceptions around mindfulness and even misconceptions around looking after your own mental health. And as a result, that keeps a lot of people away from actually doing something or actually trying something. So for instance, one of the most common misconceptions that I've heard about mental health have been around the price of therapy. So people will tell me like, oh, I can't go to therapy, it's too expensive. It is really expensive in this country. But I have found with some of my friends some really interesting like hacks and ways around that. And one of them that a lot of my friends are using now and they love it is called BetterHelp. Have you heard of it?
Yeah. Mm-mm.
So it's like an app And it's the therapists are basically in the US or all around the world. And it's an app which you use either a messenger or voice calling on it. And that's how you have your sessions with your therapist. And you do a, it's a monthly subscription. And they even have a package now for people who've lost their jobs. So I think it's about like $100, $130 a month, and gives you access to your therapists, weekly or biweekly calls, messaging whenever you need to. And I thought that was just so revolutionary that people around the world, you know, you don't have to be in the US, you can be here and you can have access to a therapist 4 or 5 times a week for that price. I think it is expensive, but it's not as expensive as it would be here. What are some of the most common misconceptions that you've heard around mental health, meditation, and what are your thoughts on them?
So I think from my perspective, mental health is something that's very much owned by the clinical healthcare business, business being sort of an operative word there. But I think it's when we think about mental health support, we only think of therapy. We only think of a psychiatrist or a psychologist. And there's loads of reasons for that. You know, when we see movies and we see people lying on couches in the sort of psychiatry office. So when we now are in a world where we have lots of different solutions on the table, and that's not just an app, it's also lots of different healing modalities. It's lots of different categories within healing and well-being that contribute to our mental health. It's really just, we're working on trying to almost like rebrand mental health, trying to make sure that people can engage with it at lots of different points in time, not just when it's too late. Because I think, again, sort of where we're up to right now, we think of, when we say mental health, people automatically think of mental illness, you know, not health, not when you're kind of feeling well. So when you are having a down day versus when you are diagnosed with clinical depression, they're two different things. We're on a spectrum of health and it peaks and troughs, just like our physical health. So I think there's just a lot of misunderstanding around that, that we, looking at it quite optimistically at the beginning of unpacking a lot of that and what it's going to look like in 5 years' time, hopefully we'll have a little bit more clarity so that absolutely everybody can engage at some point rather than having, excuse me, that's a big word, but like, I can't afford it. It's, you know, it's for other people, it's not for me, is going to be readdressed for sure.
I agree. I think people kind of wait till it's gotten as bad as depression or addiction, or it has to be a problem to be solved. It's not a daily routine that takes care of you. It's not sustaining something. Especially also, I think it's because you can't, physical stuff is just so much easier to take care of than mental stuff is. Because a physical ouchie, for example, you can heal it, you can put a Band-Aid on it, you can see the scab forming, it goes away. Whereas mental stuff, scars, you can't see them. And so people just go around their business thinking they're fine when they're really not. The other thing that I feel like people come up with in terms of just, I don't want to call it an excuse, but it is just, I don't have the time. And I remember Deepak Chopra says this. He says, people that say, I don't have the time to meditate, they're the ones that need double doses or triple doses of it because their lives are just too busy. So, and also I find that I kind of, you know, try my best to make this stuff as exciting as possible, but it's not as exciting. People just don't find it as exciting to sit down and close their eyes than to move in a class that is, you know, with loud music and props and, you know, I don't know, teacher talking and like all the other stuff that goes with a physical practice. It's just not as exciting, I find. So,
but both can be forms of meditation.
Both can be forms of meditation, for sure.
Yeah.
But I think just the sitting down, being still part for people is just difficult. And so they'd rather not do it.
Do you think that it's difficult for it's just, it's like different levels and you eventually get there? Or do you think that depending on your personality and the kind of person you are, or depending on your preferences and your way of life and the way you're wired, one of these is better suited to you?
Quite honestly, this practice is for everyone. I think some people might find it earlier based on who they are, and they might already have calm personalities, kind of like the yin practice or restorative practices. But the people that need it more are the ones that go for power yoga and, you know, can't seem to actually stay still in shavasana. They're the ones that actually need it more. more so than the others. Yeah. So I think it's a practice that comes to you when you're ready. But I think the more and more you go down this path of, you know, just building, cultivating the sense of awareness in your own body, the more you get interested in finding out more.
I think what was really interesting for me also was discovering that there are other ways to practice this mindfulness or this meditation. So in the beginning, you were saying like, it's being in the moment when you're drinking your water, or it's being in the moment when you're having a conversation. For me, being in the moment when I'm having a conversation used to be so hard because I was always thinking about what I was going to say next. Mm. And like, that's no way to have a conversation with anyone because you're not actually listening. And in the same vein, there's like mindfulness or meditation through music and through like calm movements, like things like Tai Chi, for example, which I did a few times with my dad. That was awesome. Yeah. And so things like, I think, you know what got really popular for a while? And especially I think it came back during COVID was the coloring, the mindfulness coloring. I saw that everywhere on Instagram. But like that's another way to sort of, maybe you'll agree, is dip your toes into meditation. It's like an entry level practice. And then there's endless apps. Which ones do you use?
I like Insight Timer.
I haven't tried that one.
Yes.
I saw it a few times. Giselle Bundchen just released a meditation on it. I think that's why I saw it.
Yeah, there's for me, because I'm quite a sort of solution person, like whatever it is that I'm kind of intuitively sensing that I need to work on that day, week, you know, hour, that you can pretty much just go and sort of like inner child stuff today, you know, give me some of this. So
yeah,
I do find it sort of quite accessible. But I started with Headspace. I think quite a lot of people do.
Yeah.
And just found that I do have sort of quite a strong spiritual side, so I needed something a little bit more woo woo. So that was my kind of the next step.
There's Calm as well, which is one of the more popular ones.
Yeah.
And I think Calm, Insight Timer, Mindspace, but there's a fourth one that people usually mention. I can't remember what it is now. They're amazing. There's so much on there. There's an insane amount of material. And I think it works because you can choose, you know, like you're saying, how spiritual you want it, the length of time you want it, etc.
It's almost a little bit overwhelming as well at the same time.
Too many options.
Because it's not just the apps, it's YouTube, it's, you know, and coming across things, different websites, different books that you read, different teachers that are out there. So for someone potentially like myself that does get easily overwhelmed, it's like, where do I start with this stuff?
Yeah.
That can be sort of tricky navigating it. So you've just got to try, see what works for you best.
Yeah. I think one of the big misconceptions for me that I had to get over was this weird belief that to be meditating, you had to have an empty mind. I don't know if you guys hear that a lot. Neha, maybe people have said that to you in your classes, but there's this misconception that you sit there and you successfully empty your mind of all thoughts. And everyone I've spoken to has started meditation out with that belief. And it ends up being a really, really frustrating endeavor because you can't empty your mind. And so you have a feeling you're failing throughout the whole time. But it was explained to me that, in fact, it's not about emptying your mind. It's just about disconnecting yourself from your thoughts. Is that how you'd explain it?
Yeah. I mean, the point is you want to get to a place where you realize that you have a choice to go on the roller coaster ride. Mm. You have a choice to indulge in the thought or just to let it flow and let the next one come. I remember there was one person on the retreat, and I mean, all of us were going through it. I mean, it's hard work. Like, I think meditation is so much harder for me right now than physical practice. Physical is easy compared to sitting. It's painful. Like, it's really hard work. Again. Come back to the start. Yeah. So it's hard work. There's one, the app that I use. I haven't actually used any of the others. Someone put me on to this app called Waking Up with Sam Harris.
Ah, yes, that's the other one.
And it's a beautiful, like, his introductory program is beautiful. It used to be 50 days. Now it's 29, I think. But what he does really beautifully is actually take you from very, very simple concept of anapanasati, which is just watching your breath. And then he lays on top of that, you know, sensations. You start to suddenly feel tingling and all that kind of stuff. And then lays on top of that emotions. And so it just kind of layers from day, you know, from like not even day to day, but I'd say like week to week. So you can start to understand that you've got this toolbox, just like when you roll out a mat and you think, today I'm going to do my handstand practice versus today I'm just going to kind of do a couple of slow moving hip openers. And you kind of understand really intuitively what your body is asking for. It's the same way that you treat your mind. Mm. You don't do the same practice perhaps every day. Some days it's just my mind is so busy. All I can do today is perhaps just focus on coming back to my breath each time because I know that I'm going to run away with lots of thoughts. So I'm going to keep it really simple. I'm just watching the inhale and the exhale and hoping for the best. Other days, my mind is super calm. Okay, maybe today's a great day to explore how I'm feeling. What's living in my body today? Is there a little bit of anxiety that I can address? You know, so it's like different days call for different tools. And that's what all these practices are about, even chanting for that matter. I keep telling my students, chanting is not some Sanskrit, you know, mantra that you have to be able to remember to recite. A chant can be as simple as, I surrender. Mm. You know, it can be whatever you're resonating with in that moment. It needs to be true to you. So if you're not Hindu and you don't understand, you know, Ganesha, or you don't understand Shiva, don't worry about that stuff. Choose a sentence, a positive present moment sentence that resonates with you, and that becomes your chant. And you work that chant for a couple of days, a couple of weeks, and see how that works for you. So, you know, it's like you have all of these different tools in your toolbox to work with the mind that you have on the day, just like we do with your physical body.
Yeah, that's beautiful, actually. Let's say someone listening to this has never experimented with meditation, has never followed a practice, never downloaded any of these apps. What would your advice be for basically like a newbie, someone who's not too sure how to get into it, who is maybe a little bit worried about not being the right person for meditation or not finding the right practice for them?
I think probably you have to start like addressing some of those, you know, preconceptions that you have of it. You know, like you said, going into meditation, thinking you're going to empty your mind, you're almost sort of setting yourself up for a fall. Mm. So, really kind of understanding what your objective is potentially as well, what you're really trying to aim for, what are the things you're going to work with. And I said there is a lot of resources out there that can kind of guide. I just find talking to people really helps as well, you know, and I've seen now how that's sort of filtering out, like my social group of friends and what I do in my day job, it's very far removed from them. We don't really even talk about mental health and well-being as sort of groups, but now I'm sort of seeing other people recommending different things to one another. And I think when you're in a sort of peer group, you kind of migrate to those people because you have similarities, and so actually it's potentially something that recommendation exchange that can help set you on a path that potentially is going to be useful for you. Mm. But yeah, expectation is always going to trip you up if you're going in, you know, for a whole healing and it's not going to be possible.
Yeah.
Meditation in the beginning, especially, is a shit show. Like it's really, like it's horrible and it's hard because all this stuff that you've been avoiding for decades or years or whatever starts to show up, and it is really hard work to sit with that stuff. So it's not like you're not going to receive any healing in the beginning at all. It's like you're opening up literally like a closet that hasn't been cleaned for decades, and all the stuff that's been piling up is going to show up, and it's hard. Mm. So it just depends again on what your objective is, and maybe sitting in stillness isn't where you begin. Maybe it's a group sound healing meditation. You know, again, it depends on what you're ready for.
Yeah.
Where have you been? What have you done in the past? And, you know, where would you like to take this process of healing?
To your point, I think what's awesome is there's so much available right now. And even if you're not there physically, there are like thousands of courses and classes and videos, sound meditation, gong meditation, guided meditation, and so much that you can find online. So I think, was it you who was saying that there's almost too much out there? Yeah, yep. But I mean, so try and see.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
You get good at your search terms. Be very specific.
With what you want?
Yeah, with what you need.
Meditation's a good over Netflix.
There you go. Yeah. It's out there. It for sure is out
for there. For sure. Thank you so much, ladies. It was so good having you today. Thank you for discussing and sharing your personal stories and you know, getting so deep with me, with our viewers, with our listeners. And I really hope that they walk away today feeling a little bit more curious about meditation, a little bit less daunted about it, and more willing to sort of explore and see what's out there. Because like you've both said, it's life-changing, and it is much, much needed this year. And another thing is that Lululemon ME, so that's the Lululemon Instagram account, will be hosting weekly Instagram live activations around mental health. I don't know if you guys will be tuning in.
I'm going to be teaching one, actually, on the 10th.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. What is it going to be?
It's a live class. Okay. So I believe it's 8:30 in the morning.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. So that'll be on Lululemon ME's Instagram account throughout the month of October, once a week. So tune in, and thank you for listening.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. Thanks for listening today. If you're not familiar with Goodness, head to www.goodness.me to access the online platform and articles, and follow us at Goodness on Instagram. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate, review, and share it, and we'll see you next week.